What's up, everybody? It's Chad. I'm back again with another episode of Ask Chad Grassy Logic. I'm here today with my friend, Dr. Hilda Chavez. Thank you for joining me.
Nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course, you know, anytime. And you know, I'm glad you brought all these goodies, and I'm sure you guys noticed this right away. There's a bunch of stuff in front of me, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. But first, you know, I really want to get into who Dr. Chavez is and, you know, give you a chance to introduce yourself.
Well, I'm a doctor of natural medicine, New Mexico resident, have been practicing for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. My passion is obviously whole foods, mm-hmm. herbal medicine, and cannabis is whole food and herbal medicine. Mm-hmm. So that's been my focus for the last 40 years. My partners and I were the first ones to start certifying patients back in 2007.
Oh, wow.
When no one else would do it, mm-hmm. because the medical doctors were uninformed, uneducated, and they thought they were going to lose their license because they were prescribing. Well, they're not prescribing. They're certifying.
Yeah.
They're just saying that the benefits outweigh the risks. And that's basically all they had to say, but they wouldn't sign. So we decided we would be the ones. And we accumulated over 4,500 patients since 2007.
Yeah,
you were one.
Yeah.
Met you in 2011, I believe.
2013. Yes, ma'am.
And I remember even then you had a passion for advocacy and especially for veterans.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm so just delighted that you have gotten to this point where you can make a bigger impact in the community.
Thank you. And I think that was more of my goal from the start.
Yes.
And I think you remember that, the mission I wanted to get on. And this is the woman who actually got me started. If it wasn't for you, I don't know, you know, if I would have been where I was, because, you know, you got me on that news article that I think went national. And then after that, Jessica Hilley of Drug Policy reached out to me. And then that's when I got involved with the first New Mexico Patients Alliance, you know, and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of started with you and kind of just snowballed from there. And, you know, here we are today.
Well, that's what we want to do. We want to collaborate, cooperate, mm-hmm. and, you know, put as much good information out there to help not only the patients and the recreational users, but also the medical community, the mm-hmm. mental health community, the law enforcement community. All these people need to be aware.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, sorry for that, guys. Remix in the studio. So we'll just cut that part out, Gino.
You know, back then in 2007, I think there were like, when I got certified as a medical patient, there were like 200 patients.
Yeah.
And now, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, is the medical program is in peril.
Yeah.
Big time. And
yeah.
I am focused and dedicated to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one thing that I've been trying to focus on too. And especially when I go to Santa Fe and I fight, you know, I try to make sure that the patients are always in mind. And, you know, that's one thing I try to tell people too, is that we had patients in mind when we went medical, because we put that 20% aside for patients at all times. You know, that everybody needs to put 20% of their inventory aside for patients. And I'm glad that we did that, because that ensures that we always have medicine, you know, no matter where we go in the state.
Exactly. Well, we are pretty much 90% medical.
Yeah.
I mean, we, of course, welcome any recreational user, because we all started out as recreational users.
Yeah.
But I have learned a lot in 40 years. And so I know that there's a big difference. And maybe we can talk about that sometime.
Yeah. You know, here in a little bit, we'll get down to that, because you see why we have all this product here. I just want to get, you know, to your background first. You know, you're helping people and everything. And where did you get started with cannabis? I don't think I've ever asked you this.
Okay.
Years I've known you.
I have an interesting story. I have a grandmother, well, not anymore. She passed away in Sinaloa, Mexico. Mm-hmm. And when I was a little girl, every summer I would spend it at her ranch out in the middle of nowhere. No water, no running water, no electricity. But she had a garden. And in her garden, she grew marijuana. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you're a little kid, you don't know what marijuana is. You just learn about all the herbs. She was my teacher in the Hispanic tradition, usually a medicine woman like me is taught by an elder or an aunt or a grandmother. And that's something that's kind of being lost these days. But I was blessed to have a grandmother who used the marijuana. She didn't smoke it. She would put it in jars with alcohol, rub it on her joints, take some little hits of it. And she lived to be 94.
Oh, wow.
She was riding a burro the last time I saw her. And I was like, you know, that's my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And as I got to be a teenager, I was like, my grandmother's growing marijuana. She's going to get arrested.
Yeah.
So I was a little freaked out. But in those days, in the 60s, it was not a big deal. Yeah. People grew their own. They didn't sell it. It wasn't like the cartels today.
Yeah, yeah.
So she was my first influence. And then as I became a teenager, of course, I was enamored with herbal medicine and I studied as much as I could. Finished high school, went to college. I was studying music and journalism in college. But then I decided, I think I want to do medicine, but I don't want to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. So there were no schools around here. The only school was in Santa Fe. And I went there for 2 years after I got out of college. I went there, studied natural medicine, continued my work with herbal medicine, and cannabis was always in the forefront.
Yeah,
I've been teaching people how to use cannabis without smoking it for about 40 years. Cancer patients, because remember back in the day, there was no hospice.
Yeah.
So I meet a friend and they'd say, oh, my grandmother has cancer. And, you know, would cannabis be something that would help her? Of course. But I would teach them how to make it into a tea or into a tincture or into an edible so that they would have at least quality of life while they were dying. Mm-hmm. It's not a cure-all. It's not going to cure the cancer. It's not going to do all the things that some people think it does, but it is important in the quality of life.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. You know, that's something that you've taught me through my time of, you know, being a patient and everything, especially in the early years. You know, you're always teaching me something new. And I think I remember the alcohol story. I think you told me that back in the day about the tincture.
The tincture, yeah.
And that's one of the first times I learned about that. And actually, I think I went home and actually did that. Because, you know, I'd been growing, you know, back then
for
as well.
Own, yeah.
Yeah, I've been growing for myself. You know, back then we had PPLs, or personal production license for those of you who aren't aware. And so, yeah, I was always growing mine. And, you know, I think you actually shared some seeds with me one time. And that was really nice of you.
Yeah. Lima Limon, I think.
Yes, the Lima Limon. Yes. Yeah, yeah. You shared some seeds with me. That was really cool.
Lima Limon seeds came from Oaxaca.
Yeah.
And they were given to me by a friend who lives there. And they are one of the most incredible plants. They grow to be 13 feet tall, some of them. The colas are 12 to 14 inches.
Holy crap.
I mean, they're incredible. It's still one of my favorite plants to grow. I still grow it in my backyard.
Oh, you still have some?
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll maybe have to get some more seeds from you.
Okay. I actually sell my seeds at the dispensary.
Oh, you do? Okay, yeah, maybe I'll go by and buy them then. Yeah.
Well, I'll give you some.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's really nice of you.
So back to the one point that you made about the PPL, the personal production license. I was so happy when the New Mexico Department of Health allowed that, because I knew that a lot of people were recreational users. They were not going to get a card, but they could at least learn that if they got a card, they could grow their own.
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't have the expense of having to buy it in the black market or at a dispensary. And if you remember, in 2007, there was like a few dispensaries, a few production facilities, hardly any manufacturing. So teaching the patient how to grow their own and make their own medicine was key.
Yes, 100%. You know, even when I became a patient in 2013, because I got out of the Army in around 2011, 2012 area. And, you know, that was really important to me because I saw the fact that I didn't have any dispensaries, in, you know, where I was living.
In Alamogordo?
Yeah, in Alamogordo, yeah. Where I was, you know, I was living with my parents at the time when I first got out. So there was no dispensaries. You know, the only one was Rio Doso and I think here in Cruces. So, you know, I was stuck between going to Border Check or up the mountain. And so, you know, it was like, well, I'm good at growing, so I really want to grow my own. And yeah, that's where that came from. And yeah, the PPL was cool at first because I only had to ask my parents for permission, you know, which is easier. But once I got to a rental, then it became a little more questionable. Luckily, I had a landlord who was really cool with it. She was, you know, pro cannabis and she was like, yeah, I'll do it. So every year she wrote me the letter. You know, that's why I was able to continue my growing journey and everything.
Do you still grow it now?
Still grow it to this day.
Awesome.
Yeah, I have some hanging up right now.
Awesome. Well, so that's another point is, now that the legalization has happened, you're allowed legally to grow at least 12 plants, I believe.
Six plants
that you can grow on your own. Well, if some of my patients after 20 years have become very good growers,
yes,
masterful growers.
Yeah.
So I encourage them, if they have the place to grow it, get a micro license. Mm-hmm. Get a micro license, grow 100 plants. We will buy them. The dispensaries will buy them because we want to support the local patients.
Yeah, Definitely, you know, especially, you know, supporting local businesses, because, you know, we were, you know, talking off, you know, off screen a little bit, you know, there's a lot of people not doing the right thing right now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, bringing in out-of-state product,
yep.
You know, which doesn't support local whatsoever. No. You know, the money doesn't stay here. The product doesn't come from here. You know, exactly. It's, you know, just an empty product for New Mexico, really, and just, you know, emptiness all around. So, you know, that's something I can talk about all day.
I know.
But you know, that's something that hopefully will change come June.
With SB6. Yeah.
Yeah. With SB6.
That's what was missing from the beginning.
Yes.
The law enforcement arm. I remember talking to the governor when she was running for mm-hmm. governor and looking her right into her eyes and say, promise me that you will allow New Mexicans first to get a roots in the industry before you open it to the whole world. She didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that has become an issue because that's part of the illegal activities. Yeah. A lot of it is coming from other states.
Yeah. And a lot of it are from people from those respective states that they came from.
Yeah.
You know, Oregon, Oklahoma, you know,
Colorado.
California.
Oklahoma. Yeah.
Oklahoma's the big one.
Yeah.
You know, they're flooded with cannabis over there. That's one thing that they did that was wild is they didn't limit plants at all.
I know.
There was, you know, acres and acres of just plants.
Yep.
You know, it's crazy, you know, how much cannabis is out in Oklahoma. So it had to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, a lot of it came here. So it's great to see that, you know, someone doing it right. But, you know, so let's talk about that. You know, let's talk about your business. What's it called and where's it at?
So Akizo Botanicals is the name of our dispensary and mm-hmm. our grow and our manufacturing. We have a vice license. So we have three licenses. Akizo is the Greek goddess of healing and curing.
Okay.
So true to my nature, that's what I wanted to put out there. I mean, there's all kinds of names that people call them, but we're servicing the medical patients mm-hmm. and the baby boomers.
Ah.
And they are the ones that are going to go for someone who's a little bit more medically oriented. They're intimidated walking into a dispensary that's black and full of colors and all they sell is, you know, flour.
Yeah, yeah.
So they don't know what to do when they walk into a place like that. So really my motivation for getting the three licenses was to completely be available for my patients' care.
Mm-hmm.
Because for 20 years, many of the patients would say, the dispensaries don't have what I want. They don't have edibles. They mm-hmm. don't have, you know, all they have is flour.
Yeah.
So, and that was basically all they had in the beginning. Now, very few places have mostly flour. They have cartridges. They have vape pens. They have a lot of stuff that is questionable in terms of medicine. Because honestly, you know that even though this is to us a sacred, supposedly harmless herb, there are those that are going to misuse it.
Yeah.
And I work with a lot of mental health practitioners. And, you know, that's not being told, but a lot of people who overuse cannabis, smoking it, and in vapes and wax and the stronger stuff, they're mixing it with benzos and other drugs.
Ooh, yeah.
And they're having major problems. So mm-hmm. this isn't being talked about. You don't hear about it too much.
Yeah, and it's always important to talk to your doctors about the matters. You know, even when you go under for operation, they tell you not to use cannabis 24 hours before.
And you should tell your doctor that you use it.
Yeah. And
because you use more anesthesia on a THC patient.
Yeah, exactly. So the reason why you need to be honest is because they could give you the wrong amount or it won't work or you wake up during the procedure or something like that. And you don't want that. So please
be honest
with your doctors. They're not going to report you, whatever. Just be honest. You know, you're a cannabis user. I did before, you know, when they asked me. And you know what? To be honest, they were really cool about it.
Yeah.
The lady, she begged me. She said, just please don't use cannabis 24 hours before. She says, afterwards, use it all you want. She says, I think it's the best thing. You know, so, you know, they're usually pretty cool about it. But yeah, always consult with your doctors. You know, if you're on other medications, if you have, you know, something wrong with you, say you have a heart condition or maybe you have a mental condition already, you know, that, you know, might trigger something or some kind of episode, always consult your doctor. And that's one reason why it's important when you, you know, do medical, you know, when you do cannabis, sometimes if you're using it for medical reasons, it's a good idea to go like with your medical cannabis card so you can talk to doctors and they can explain to you what you're feeling, what you can expect, maybe different models and ways of consuming versus just smoking, et cetera, et cetera. And so let's get into that actually. So you have a bunch of products here with me.
Right. But before I go to the products, I want you to know that one of the main things we do at our dispensary is educate. I mean,
awesome.
That's all we do.
Yeah.
And one of the sections of this little brochure is a guide to finding your best edible dose. Mm-hmm. Because I can't tell you how many people come in and tell us, oh, my nephew gave me a brownie. The brownie, he didn't know how many milligrams was in it. And the person usually has a bad experience.
Yeah.
They think they're dying. Yeah. Their heart rate goes up. They think they're having a heart attack. They get paranoid. They want to go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
So we made sure that we let everyone know, because we get a lot of newbies, beginners, mm-hmm. who have never smoked it, who are medical patients. Mm-hmm. They want to know, well, how much do I take?
Yeah.
You know, do I take 50 milligrams? Do I take 100 milligrams? So we work with them and make sure they understand the importance of the dose.
Yeah. And it's important you do that, because people tend to not read, you know, and I've, you know, known that throughout my years of, you know, doing advocacy.
Baby boomers read.
Yes. Baby boomers do read. I'll give you guys that. Yes. You guys do read. And you read very thoroughly.
Yep.
You know, sometimes correcting me, I was like, oh, I did spell that wrong. Thanks. But, you know, the newer generations, you know, my generation, Gen X, you know, and beyond, we tend to not read, you know, we like it just given to us and fed to us, you know, kind of like now. And so that's unfortunate, you know, but, you know, people like yourself can step in and give them that verbal information, that verbal education.
Yeah. And that's really the difference between, I'm not a medical doctor. I am a naturopathic doctor. So really my role in my patient's life is to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do best.
Yeah.
And when they come to me, that's what they want. They want to know. They want to learn.
Yeah.
They want to be educated.
Yeah. And you've taught me so much through the years too, you know, kind of just, you know, pushed me on beyond further than what I was already doing and what I'd already known. And, you know.
Thank you for being receptive. And because for your age, I mean, most of the kids your age, they just want it, you know, they don't care. They want, I want the highest THC you've got. And I ask them, why?
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
Yeah.
They don't know.
Yeah.
They just want it.
Yeah, it's just what's, you know, cool in the market. And I've been, you know, advocating so much for, you know, terpenes, you know, like, you know, the full spectrum of cannabis, you know, all the cannabinoids that are inside of it.
Terpenes.
Exactly. Right there. You have, you know, limonene and all that. And you got, you know, pinene and, you know, you got all the good ones on there. You know, those are, there's many more, but these are some of the most common ones.
And they're important in the mix with the cannabinoids. That's what a lot of people don't know. Now, a few people are starting to come in and asking about terpenes.
Yeah.
So they're catching on.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, and then we're finding out that, you know, it's not all about the THC. You know,
that's
THC is more of a sales gimmick than anything. I've had cannabis that's 16%, but the terpenes in it are probably 2.5 to almost 3%. And man, it kicks my ass.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I'm like, whoa. And well, I enjoyed it.
This is an interesting strain that we recently got called Arise, A-R-I-S-E.
I've had Arise, yes.
Well, so this is a fluke. Okay. Usually Arise has 20% or more THC. These growers at Aim High, by fluke, ended up with a strain of Arise that's 16% CBD and, no, 12% CBD and 6% THC, which is perfect for medical.
Yeah, yeah.
The balance is 2-1.
Yeah.
And these, we cannot keep them in stock.
Really?
We sell the pre-rolls so they could try it first, and then they come back and buy ounces.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't get you all loopy and hard to function.
Yeah.
But it takes care of your anxiety and your depression and makes you functional.
It's more medicinal than it
is. It's more medicinal,
you know, absolutely. Than fun time. And that's great. That's something that I've, you know, promoted for many years, you know, 1-1s or something even higher, you know, like that. When people come to me that are new or, you know, I really want it just, you know, for medicinal only, I'm like, well, go 1-1.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get like super stoned, you know, you're going to be able to function and you'll still get that benefit.
Yeah. And that's important because most people don't even know that cannabinoids have to be balanced. And like, there's a lot of stuff being sold out there that's a distillate or an isolate and it's just pure THC.
Yeah.
Well, that's not really medicinal. You know, you need the full spectrum in order for it to be better for your body.
100%. Yeah, you know, that's one thing why I like rosin too, because, you know, it has
it's full
all
spectrum.
That in it. It's full spectrum, has everything in it, and it tastes good, it smells good.
Yeah.
And it's great in edibles too, you know. And do you have any with us today?
Yes. So all of our edibles are made from rosin. And like our grape gummies, which are delicious, they taste like grape juice. I test everything that we make.
Of course, I'm glad you do.
To make sure that it works and that it tastes good. So yeah, we do the grape gummies. We do watermelon gummies. We do pineapple mango. We're about to do some cinnamon gummies. So, you know, we listen to the patients. When they ask us for something, we try to make it.
Yeah.
So those are the gummies that are made with rosin. One very big seller in our Hispanic community is the honey bears.
Yeah.
These are 500 milligram bears, not for recreational users, for medical.
Yeah.
So the viejitos in our community, they put it in their coffee in the morning, maybe a half a teaspoon, kind of takes the edge off of their pain and inflammation, and they drink it with their pan dulce and they're happy.
That's great to see. And like, I love this. I love the little bear and everything. Yeah. And, you know, it's a little container. So, you know, just like, you know, you'd get at the store.
Yeah.
But, you know, 500 milligrams, which is great. That is, you know, for the patients that need the pain relief. You
the
know,
pain like, relief.
THC, high THC does have a place, but it's not everywhere. It shouldn't be everything and the only thing you can get.
Right. And THC is not really the best for inflammation.
Yes.
It's most of the other cannabinoids.
Yes. CBD is great for inflammation.
CBD, yeah. CBG, CBN. So I also make capsules, which very few people make, because a lot of my patients are diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to eat gummies and candy. The capsules are perfect. They're just the cannabinoids and oil.
Yeah.
So that's it made with rosin as well.
Ooh, okay.
We also make a tincture, which is made with hemp oil.
Okay.
And this is 100 milligrams for recreational users, because sometimes you don't want to be smelling like you just smoked when you have to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And oil is one of the best things. Put it under your tongue.
Yeah.
You don't get the same buzz, but you get the effect that you need to calm down.
Yeah. And that's what you're looking for, especially in public usually.
Yeah.
You know, as you're looking for that effect. And, you know, that's what I tell people too, when we're talking about consumption lounges and stuff, I'm like, keep in mind that not everybody at a consumption lounge is smoking or vaping. You know, some people are drinking it. Some people are eating it. You know, some people are, you know, just taking a capsule. You know, there's different ways to consume cannabis, and smoking isn't the only one.
Yeah.
You know, but we shouldn't be put into our basement.
Do you remember when I first met you, I told you about the cannabis canna colada that I make with the fresh leaves?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So fresh leaves do not have THC.
Mm-hmm.
They have THCA.
Yes.
Which is the CCD doesn't know what to do with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got granted recently permission to make my canna colada and put it in bottles and sell it.
Oh, good.
Because it is not psychoactive.
Yeah.
But it's great for cancer patients or patients who just want to drink something. They don't want to eat it or smoke it. They just want to drink it.
Well, care to share with, you know, what the canna colada is?
So the canna colada is basically a juice that I make out of fresh sugar leaves and sun leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh.
Yeah. Which,
you know, they haven't flowered yet.
Yeah.
They're in veg state. You put them in the blender, mix it with your favorite juice. I mix it with pineapple juice, hence the canna colada. And then you drink it. And it's a bodily feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a high.
Yeah.
It's just a relaxing, full body feeling.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I have tried that. You know, and actually I would dry some of the leaves out and put it in tea as well.
You can do that too.
Yeah.
And that's what we have this trim that you noticed earlier.
Yes.
The trim is basically when you're trimming all the buds, everything that drops. So sometimes this is stronger than the flower.
Yeah.
So what a lot of people do is make a tea out of it.
Yeah.
Or a butter or something that they can put into their edibles.
Yeah. And I love that you guys have this. And I'm not a big fan of smoking shake, but for, you know, edibles, extracts, phenomenal. And the fact that you guys have that, and how much is that?
So we're the only dispensary in town that sells our ounces or flower are $50 and our trim is $25 for an ounce.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, especially for, you know, the medical patients.
For
medical
patients.
Because I went to Washington a few years ago and, you know, one of the dispensaries out there had an option for that.
Yeah.
And my best friend, you know, she didn't know how to make canna butter, but she didn't really want to smoke at the time. And I was like, all right, I'll make you canna butter. So we went and got that. And I was like, you know, that's great. You know, that I can go to the store. I want to make edibles, you know, and I have that option to just go to the store, pick up a bag and go back and make some edibles.
So I'm old school.
Yeah.
In my college days, we would make a pot of butter with flour, right? And it would stink up the whole neighborhood. And, but in those days, you couldn't buy anything. I mean, you had to buy it in the black market.
Yeah.
But that was one way that we as poor students could afford to make the medicine and share it.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it makes sense. And yeah, she shared a little with me. You know, we had some edibles that she made, but she was always putting in her tea in her coffee. So
tea, that's another thing about the trim is, you know, there's a big problem with women's reproductive issues.
Yes.
A lot of women have endometriosis and premenstrual problems, and drinking cannabis tea is like one of the best medicines.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And so we've been selling a lot of it to a lot of women.
That's great. That's good to hear. You know, the fact that the, you know, they're going that route, you know.
Yeah, instead of smoking it.
Yeah, instead of smoking it for it, you know, again. You always scold me for smoking, I know.
Again, I'm old school and I used to smoke. I was a big pothead in my day and I hurt my lungs. So mm-hmm. that's the reality of it, is that if you smoke that much, and I did, you're going to hurt your lungs. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of Vietnam vets now that are in their 70s and 80s. They now have COPD and emphysema because not only did they smoke pot, but they smoke cigarettes. Now they're having all kinds of issues. And so they're like, okay, can I learn how to do edibles? Because I can't smoke anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, I would rather my patients that are medical not smoke it if possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's an individual choice.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that.
But look at all the choices that we have.
Yeah. Yeah. You got, you know, the flower here. You know, you have some of this. You know, you got the, and this is an ounce, right?
That
you have
this right is here? An ounce, yeah.
Okay. And then this one, oh, we already showed that one off. Yeah. Oh, actually, I have the some chocolates here too. So this is behind. I didn't want to forget these. So we have chocolates right here. It's just, you know, chocolate. But what kind of chocolate did you say it was?
We use the Ghirardelli chocolate, which is one of the best chocolates you can get. And we also don't put any high fructose corn syrup. We only use the finest ingredients. Those are for rec, 100 milligram bars. The lemon fudge bars are white chocolate, but they're also delicious. I mean, somebody will eat one and say, can I eat the whole thing? And I said, no, yeah. You cannot eat the whole thing.
Right. And one thing I did notice, you know, I look at everybody's cells every month, and I did notice that your rec and your patient cells are almost side by side, the exact same. And that's really rare to see at any dispensary. Even the big guys don't accomplish that. You know, yeah, their sales could be higher, but they can't accomplish getting those numbers like that.
But that's, you know, because we've been doing this for, you know, a long time. And we are here to serve the medical patients. I mean, any rec patient is, if they're willing to learn, we will teach them.
Yeah.
But the medical patients, they're in it. They want to know, how do I do this to sleep better, to reduce my pain, to reduce my anxiety? They have specific needs.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would say that 90% of our patients are medical.
Yeah.
Even though our sales might be equal, 90% of our patients are medical.
Yeah, just because you don't have a card doesn't mean it's not medicinally used for you.
Exactly. Yeah. And let's talk about that. So legalization of recreation has kind of caused some problems, especially in the mental health department. I have a lot of colleagues who tell me what they see and what they hear from their patients. And, you know, rec, it just kind of gives everybody permission to self-medicate and do whatever they want. Well, but what if you have a major problem like psychosis or bipolarism and you're just self-medicating?
Yeah.
That's a problem. Yeah. You could end up in the hospital or in the mental ward. Mm-hmm. So we have to be realistic that, yes, this is a sacred medicine, but it can be abused and it can be misused.
Yeah.
So we've seen a few cases where that has happened.
Yeah. And that's the reality. And that's something I've actually talked about on the show previously, you know, that, you know, not everything is hunky-dory, you know, and perfect with cannabis. Nothing is perfect and nothing is 100% harmful. You can die from water, you know, from drinking too much water, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, you know, fortunately for cannabis, it takes a lot smoking-wise to kill you.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is some predisposed kind of issues that you could have that could probably cause some issues down the road, or even, like you said, put you in the hospital, or, you know, even worse.
Yeah.
So, like I said, always important to talk to your doctors about this, you know, especially if you're going to be using cannabis so freely.
Well, so speaking to a medical doctor is not going to be the same as speaking to a herbalist or a natural doctor of natural medicine, because most medical doctors, they really are not up to par, up to speed with how medicine works. And the issue is that we haven't rescheduled it. And so we don't get to do research.
Yeah.
The only country in the world that's doing research is Israel. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing it for 60 years.
Yeah.
So everything I've learned, I have followed Dr. Meshulam, who just died last year. He was 88.
Yeah.
I read everything he wrote and everything he studied, because they were the only ones doing research. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we need to reschedule it, get it out of that Schedule 1, so that we can really get some good data about what really works.
Because
recently, have you seen the articles? There's like, cannabinoids don't work, CBD doesn't work, it's false. That's not true. I have years of anecdotal evidence that it does work, including personal use.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think that only one compound in cannabis would be beneficial. You know, like that's a little absurd because most plants that are medicinal or even have some kind of nutritional value have more than just that one thing to offer.
Yeah.
You know, like tomatoes, you know, they have more than just a nutritional value to offer.
That's right.
You know, there's other things that can go into it, you know, get a little fiber with it too.
So I have a question for you and your generation. How do we get your generation to be more interested in learning the sacredness of this plant and the respect for it and also respecting elders that can teach us? I learned from elders.
Yeah.
They were my mentors, and I am so glad that I was wise enough as a kid to pay attention.
You know, I think unfortunately for most of us, we didn't have the benefit of learning about it through that channel. It was through rap music, rock music, movies, you know, other things like that, and social media. So we didn't really get the idea or even know that this plant was sacred.
Yeah.
And I think it starts with informing the public and the rest of the users that this plant is sacred to start with, and we should treat it as such. Because I agree, you know, it is a sacred plant, just like, you know, psilocybin, you know, to most people's ayahuasca, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on. So I think that that's where the change needs to happen, is where we learn about these substances.
How do we get them interested, though?
We get them interested
at the dispensary, right? When they come in, they ask questions. Mm-hmm. They see other options besides just flower. They start asking questions. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, so what could I do to manage my insomnia? And that's when we've got a captive audience and we can educate them.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. You know, and it does start at the dispensary. And I say this all the time that, you know, it's your job as the retailer, you know, the storefront, they're the first and last person they see when they go to the store, obviously. So it's up to you to educate them. Don't just tell them highest THC, this and that. Just try to get them out. Educate them.
Unfortunately, many dispensaries do just that.
They do. And, you know, that's unfortunate because, you know, I go to them and they just want you in and out. Or even if you ask about terpenes, some of them will get offended. You know, like it's like you're challenging them or something. It's like, look, dude, I just wanted something that didn't smell like hay. Right. You know, like I'm just wondering if it smelled good. That's all. My bad.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to offend anybody. But, you know, that's the unfortunate reality we live in. You know, and someone told me, you know, a while back that, you know, there's a way things are and a way things should be. And the way that I take that is, yeah, right now that's not the case. But in the future, if you try to change it, it will be. You know, but don't get mad at the way things are right now.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't get mad, but I see a lot of improvement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first 2 years of CCD was horrible.
Yeah.
They didn't know what they were doing. And there was all this Wild West consciousness and people just growing illegally and selling illegally and because there was no law enforcement.
Yeah.
But I think this new director, Todd Stevens over at CCD, I think he's going to make a difference.
Yeah.
He comes from a background of cannabis. So he comes from a reality.
Yeah.
And he's been through Colorado for years.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to see a new face at CCD.
He's been a little more proactive, you know, than the last ones on certain issues and matters. You know, even at the Roundhouse, you know, I got to speak with him on a few things. And, you know, he did want to work with the industry. And that's one thing that, you know, is lucky for us is that, you know, we have the overseeing, you know, entity is wanting to work with us. But, you know, there's going to be an issue with that that we'll talk about actually here in the show a little bit that actually might make that a little bit harder.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, there's certain things that you should do and shouldn't do. But yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, we are lucky that, you know, the CCD is trying hard. They had their, I think everybody had their learning time. You know, all of the businesses had, you know, they gave them about a year to figure it out, you know, before they really started to crack down. That's a long time. And even now they're still, you know, not all the way cracking down like I feel they should. But there's certain instances where people tell me, oh, yeah, you know, they came in and I just had this wrong. You know, the trash can was in the wrong place or something stupid. You know, like you shouldn't get dinged for that. I get it. Cool. So, you know, they're not being, you know, hard asses is what I'm trying to say. But at the same time, I feel like there's certain things that they're missing.
In the beginning, there were no compliance officers.
Yeah, I remember.
And now, according to the last compliance officer that came to visit us, there are 13 in the whole state.
Oh, really?
They're going to hire more.
Yeah.
One lives here, actually.
Okay.
So we have somebody that we can actually talk to locally. So yeah, I'm a little bit OCD and neurotic about the law. I want to make sure everything is done perfectly right. And so, you know, not everybody agrees with me on that. They say, well, who's going to know if you do something? I say, I'm going to know.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a learning curve. CCD needs to be a little bit more proactive and, like, literally visit and talk to the dispensary owners and make sure that everybody's kind of on the same page about following the rules. Like this rule with the pesticide
yeah.
that wasn't in the list.
Yeah.
It's a pesticide.
Yeah.
It shouldn't, even if it wasn't in the list, shouldn't be using it.
Yeah.
It's medicine that we're using.
Yeah.
And with a pesticide?
Yeah. No, it shouldn't be near the cannabis at all.
It's not okay.
And we'll talk about that too, actually. So let's wrap up the Akeso, right? Is that how you say it? I was calling it a queso at first. I was like, sounds like cheese.
But Akeso. Did you have a little sharp sign over there?
I didn't see that. Yeah, at first. Yeah. So now I see it. I'm like, oh, Akeso. Okay. So that makes sense. While I was like, sounds like queso.
Or Akeso. Some people say Akeso.
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 So where can everyone find you online and in person, you know, to go visit and get educated?
Well, our dispensary is in Mesilla Park. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's in Mesilla Park, it's not the most beautiful area of town, but it's an industrial area.
Got it.
And we followed the rules back then that said you cannot be anywhere near another dispensary, a church, a school, a playground. So we found this place and met all the rules. But, you know, now everybody can just get special permits and mm-hmm. open up in a neighborhood. Like we have neighbors where my office is on Mesquita that are not happy
yeah.
that there's a dispensary right there.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are things that are going to happen. But you can find us on Facebook, on Google. We're working on a website, which is the next step. And do you know Mike Cook? He's a reporter with the Las Cruces Bulletin.
I don't think so.
He is retired now, and he's helping me create a social media presence. So mostly for educational purposes.
Yeah. That's great because you have so much to share, you know, even more than what I share with my guests, my audience and everything.
Well, you share a lot and you are, you know, picking people who can bring information to your audience that they need to have.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. So, and I appreciate the conversation. I look forward to, you know, doing a update, you know, sometime maybe later this year, next year, and then, you know, see where you are again. You know, I've love talking to you and seeing you every time. And, you know, I can't wait to see what this brand has to offer. So, you know, like you have a lot of options and being the fact that it's medically based, I love that. You know, there's not many places around still that, you know, are minded like that. So
even the medical ones have kind of shifted towards recreational.
Yeah. Or, you know, they got out of the industry because they just couldn't make it on the medical side. So it's great to see that you're really embracing the medical patients.
I am. Yeah.
And I love that. So,
well, I'm a patient as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we never did this for the sake of making millions. Like a lot of people think that they're going to make millions opening a dispensary. That's not the case. It's a lot of work. It might take 3 years before you even see a profit because the first couple of years is all about money out, money out, money out. Licenses, insurance. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
So we're in our year and a half.
Yeah.
And we're still standing. We're thriving. We're growing every day. But, you know, we also have a different agenda.
Yeah.
Our agenda is medicine. And low cost.
Yeah.
So, which very few dispensaries do.
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, you said this is outdoor greenhouse, right? The flower?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, not a lot of places offer those price points, you know, for, you know, the medical quality. So I really appreciate it. Everyone, you know, go check them out. You know, I need to go check you out too. Get some of these chocolates.
Absolutely.
Get some of these chocolates, you know, because you have the 500 milligrams, right?
We are making now 500 milligram chocolates for the medical patients. But we were focused on the 100 because introducing stuff to the recreational users.
Yeah,
definitely. Because that's all they can buy.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. But if you're New Mexico resident, you haven't got your medical cannabis card, stop paying taxes.
We still do medical cards. Now, that's another point I want to make. In 2015, New Mexico Department of Health kind of changed the rules and allowed anyone who had a medical license to certify patients. Well, there's a lot of places that opened up that were just selling cards for $50.
Yeah, the card mills.
The rules are very clear in the New Mexico and in the CCD that you must have an established relationship with your certifying practitioner. Well, that went out the window in 2015.
Yeah.
So now the program is in peril.
Yeah.
What was it, 2023, there were over 186,000 medical patients?
2022 before legalization occurred, yes.
And then and now there's like, what, 86,000?
Yeah, we're probably at the same numbers around 2015, because that's around the same time that, you know, we got to 80,000. So we're back to those previous numbers.
So I appreciate what you're doing. And I think that we need to kind of join forces and educate people that we cannot let this program die.
I agree.
Because there's always going to be patients. Always. Mm-hmm. Medical patients, especially, because we're all getting older.
Yeah.
And we're going to end up with some kind of medical issue. Well, if you don't have a card and you don't have the guidance, you're going to be floundering. You're not going to know what to do.
Yeah.
And you're going to walk into a dispensary, you're going to be overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And, you know, we're fortunate enough to still have a medical cannabis program. You know, some states got rid of it altogether.
I know.
Or they pretty much got to a point where it's not even worth having a card. I mean, and it, we're lucky to have tax-free cannabis here. Most states still tax their medical cannabis. So that's a benefit that we reap that not everybody else does. So yeah, if you don't have your card now, if you think it's not worth it, it's totally worth it.
It's totally worth it. It pays for itself. And now it's a 2-year card.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the advantage with us is that you have continued guidance and education, and we have a dispensary to support you. So, you know, it's not like you're not getting anything. You're getting a lot.
Yeah. So you're,
but that's where the thing comes in about respecting the old ways and the traditional medicinal ways, because I mean, I have to say, I'm getting old, you know, I'm going to be 70 pretty soon. And I have a lot of wisdom and a lot of experience. I want to share it because when I die, it's going to be gone.
Yeah, it goes with you.
Yeah. So I'm an open book in terms of my patients. I teach them everything I know.
Yeah. What good is information if you're just going to keep it till you die? Yeah. Just like money, right?
Right.
Can't,
that's right.
Yeah, can't share it when you're gone. Well, anyway, thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to our conversations again. I always look forward to our conversations.
Yeah.
But I look forward to having you on again. And, you know, let's continue on to the podcast and everything, because we have a lot more to talk about. And there's a few topics that I do want to get to. So
Okay. Let's
get to them.
Okay.
So what we're going to talk about next, we're going to talk about the Border Patrol. So as you know, living in the South, we deal with Border Patrols. Actually, in Cruces, any direction that you go, you're going to hit a border check.
Yep.
I grew up in Alamogordo. Luckily, we only had two that we had to deal with, but that was still enough for me to not like them.
Right.
you know, even having one in my area would probably be annoying.
Right.
And as you know, some of you know or may not know that are watching, Department of Homeland Security or Border Patrol, you know, they're under Department of Homeland Security, along with the Coast Guard. They have jurisdiction within 90 miles of the border. So that's why we have inland border checks in the first place. So meaning they can also run warrantless pretty much searches of your house if they wanted. And I think Supreme Court upheld that not long ago. That's actually where the information I got that from. So it's unfortunate that now we're dealing with the Border Patrol seizing biotracked cannabis. And that's a threat to the whole industry, because especially down here in the South, we have Sunland Park, which reaps in millions upon millions of dollars just in the whole Cruces Sunland Park area from those areas. Millions of dollars comes to here. And there's certain businesses that rely on their product getting out of Cruces as well as in, because there's a lot of farms down here now, you know, and there's still some getting up.
Yeah.
And the quality that we have down here is really good. So places up north and other places in the state, because like I said, any direction you go, east or west as well, you're going to run into the border check. And now they're starting to seize the product. And it seems that they're kind of hands off at the beginning. You'd hear about it every now and then, you know, someone would, you know, run into an issue, but it doesn't seem to be changing. And I talked about this last week. I know some of you are like, oh, yeah, I know you talked about this last week. Well, some updates have happened. So it looks like a couple of cannabis businesses are starting to band together to try to figure this out. And they're trying to figure out, you know, is it a lawsuit that needs to happen? Do we need to contact our representatives? You know, what's the route that we need to go? And the route that we really need to go is the diplomatic route, of course. You know, let's try to figure it out forefront first. Let's talk to our government representatives and try to figure out what we can do. Now, the unfortunate part is some of us in the industry have tried that, and they were met with, you know, one of the Border Patrol agents telling them it's kind of weird, or, you know, they're kind of shocked at the fact that they're so comfortable talking to them about an illegal substance like this to a federal agent or federal police officer, and pretty much just told him to fuck off, you know, and, you know, like, we're going to do what we want. And that just didn't blow my mind, but it just made me realize, okay, well, something changed. I don't know what it is, but this isn't going to change for a while.
This just started, right? I mean, like, within the last few months?
The last month. Last month, there was like 7 or 8 different incidences of them taking biotracked cannabis.
Yeah.
And pretty much they said they're going to take everything from now on that they find. You know, that means from patients, from rec users, from businesses, from anybody and everybody.
Well, this is partly, I think, also due to the fact that this is an election year.
Yes.
And I have a lot of patients who are former Border Patrol, U.S. Mm-hmm. Customs, sheriffs, police officers, retired. And, you know, they share a lot of information about what their indoctrination is as an officer.
Yeah.
And the main issue is that the fact that it's still Schedule One.
Yeah.
And until that changes, their hands are tied because they have to do what they're told.
Yeah.
And what they find unfair is that on a personal level, they cannot use the medicine for themselves mm-hmm. because they're federal employees.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know what happened and why it changed all of a sudden, but pretty much it's been confiscation. As long as I've lived here, there's been border checks and, you know, you go by there and you have an ounce with you or whatever, they take it.
Yeah.
So it's been quiet for a while. So I'm very surprised that all of a sudden they decided to do this. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't either. And, you know, Valerie Hubbard actually, you know, told me about this story. I didn't get to, you know, really read into it very much. But I guess in Florida, there were some Border Patrol agents over there that were starting to take money from immigrants coming into the ports from those areas. And so that's one thing that worries me. I'm like, and it's happening around the same time. And that's one thing that's kind of triggering me now. I'm like, okay, so we're having incidences of these border agents taking money from illegal, you know, people coming in illegally or even probably legally, taking money from them. And then you have over here on the other side of the country, these agents taking legal cannabis from people.
So you think it's a bribe, a mordida?
So I already have information from certain companies. Well, not certain companies, but there are a few companies that have paid off some of the agents already really? In the industry.
I'm not surprised.
I'm not either. You know, it happens on the cartel side already.
Yeah.
And so I think this could be either that they're trying to either get money, whatever, you know, trying to extort you. Or the other thing I was thinking is have someone new in charge and the guy's really trying to either make an impression, hates cannabis to the point where he's just, you know, cracking down like this. That's usually what happens when there's, you know, some kind of leadership change on the federal side, you know, especially being in the military. Yeah. I saw it. If you have someone who's gung-ho or they're just trying to prove a point or just trying to make rank, mm-hmm. you know, try to, you know, get a promotion, they're going to do something extreme like this to just, you know, make themselves look good. At the same time, they're screwing New Mexico over, the place that they're working in, the place yeah. that they live in, and the people that they live with.
Yeah.
You know, like we're benefiting from this industry. We're a poor state. You know, we're not California.
Correct.
You know, you're taking away what little we have already.
Precisely. This is the whole idea of why we decided to open a dispensary, is to provide fair market value.
Yeah.
Because the other dispensaries were just scalping the yeah. patient.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a personal choice to invest in the cannabis industry to make a difference and to upgrade people's lives and change consciousness. Mm-hmm. Because this is one of the best things that can change your consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
It's cannabis.
Yeah.
But kids don't know that. Yeah. They just smoke it to get high.
Yeah.
They don't realize that it's altering your sense of well-being, your ability to see what the world's like. And, you know, these issues with the Border Patrol, those are political.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think that Biden is under a lot of pressure to change the scheduling.
Yeah. And this could be a blessing in disguise.
Yeah,
you know,
it could be.
Yeah, you know, this could make national, and this probably will make national headlines. We already have our federal representatives, and we already have our state, you know, our state government interested in this, wanting more information. And I'm going to get you guys, you know, if you've been affected by this personally, I'll get you that information in a second, how you can kind of join in on this and, you know, help out. Because we are going to need the backing of our federal, you know, representatives, because this is a federal matter and there's yeah. nothing the state can do about it. You know, I've pondered it and I've sat there and thought, you know, one thing that, you know, I was taught in the military, especially when you're analyzing things, is you have to think of anything possible, any situation possible, even if it sounds and seems stupid. That's why sometimes I may say, oh, it might be this and this. And you guys are like, well, that sounds dumb. I'm like, it does, but it's still a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there's the saying,
you
got to
think outside the box.
Yeah, you do. Because sometimes it is outside the box yeah. of what happened.
Yep.
And so one thing I was thinking, I was like, the only thing they could do, and Texas has kind of done this, is deploy the National Guard. You know, to the border checks. That's the only thing I can think of. But at the end of the day, the federal government still controls the army, even though it's National Guard. They still control them at the end of the day.
But in Texas, they didn't bring the National Guard. They brought the Texas Guard.
Oh, yeah. They have, because New Mexico, we have a New Mexico Guard.
Yeah.
So we do have our own paramilitary here in New Mexico.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, because I kept hearing National Guard. I'm like, no. Yeah, all Biden has to do is say no, get out of there, because he controls all of our military.
But that's why the governor of Texas did it that way, because he could control the Texas Guard.
Yeah, because we actually have one here in New Mexico. It's, you know, not many people know that, but we do have a New Mexico Guard, which is technically a New Mexico-based military.
State Guard.
Yeah, it's a state guard. It's a state military. I don't know how it works. I don't know how you join. So don't ask me questions about that. I just know it exists. I'm just joining the military again. Yeah, I did that one time. I won't do it again. You know, unless something really dumb happens, I have no choice. But yeah, you know, that's the only thing I can think of. And that would be an extreme case, or even, you know, the New Mexico Guard. That would be an extreme case scenario. You know, you're literally having another standoff with the federal government, you know, at the borders. Now, would it be nice? Yeah, because it would essentially shut down the inland border checks. And for the first time in my life, other than COVID, I can drive on my highway and feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Like I'm not being harassed. Yeah. I'm not being questioned and, you know, this and that. That's why I don't like authorities, because my whole life I've been questioned by authority and treated like a criminal just because of my color and because of my last name.
Yeah.
Even at the border checks, you know, like I noticed the difference when I was with someone who's lighter skinned than me and the, you know, the passenger side, I'd get waved by versus someone who's of color, you know, like it was apparent.
It's prejudice, racism.
Yeah.
But you're on the right track, I think, of getting people involved, talking to the senators and the representatives, because they're the only ones that can really do something.
Yeah. And there's nothing the state can do. You know, their hands are tied. Mm-hmm. You know, it sucks because they're operating in our state. And I know we should be like the hell out of here, you know, then if you don't want to like help us. But that's the federal government. There's nothing we can do there. Now, Biden has been very proactive, especially lately, when it comes to the cannabis issues. Now, like I said, this could be a blessing in disguise, because this could get his attention and we could see a change soon, and maybe it could get the DEA to make a decision quicker. Because even if it's rescheduled, which I know, I get it. Most of us want to deschedule. I know the pros and cons of both, but we're most likely going to be stuck with reschedule. So, you know, just a bit of reality. So even if it gets rescheduled, that does change it for us at the borders, especially when it comes to the business wise. For a personal use wise, it might not change, because it still holds a criminal penalty being Schedule 3. So that I'm not too sure. I'm also not a lawyer. I just know that it still holds the criminal penalty. So it would make sense to me that they'll still harass me at the border check. Mm-hmm. So I don't know yet. We'll find out, you know, we'll see what the future holds on that matter.
Yeah.
But as of right now, you know, there's really nothing we can do but get a hold of your national or your federal representatives.
Yeah.
And the way you can do that is, Ben Lewinger of the Cannabis Chamber. He's one of the people putting this together. He would like, if you have been affected by this with BioTrack Cannabis, to send him an email at ben@nmcannabischamber.org. And I'll have this email in the description. Gino, if you can do that for me, that'd be great. It's in the script or the guide. I'll have that email in there for you.
But Ben is in Albuquerque.
Yes.
Locally, we need to address Debbie Moore. She's at the Las Cruces Chamber.
Okay.
And she happens to be on the board of the CCD. CCD board.
The advisory board?
The advisory board.
Okay, that makes
sense. So she would be the one locally to address some of these issues too, so that she can bring it to the board.
That's great too. I think she can get involved with this with them, because it's a bunch of different people collaborating.
Yeah, and I think she and Ben are in touch.
Yeah, so he probably already is talking to her too. He's probably going to get her this information. But the reason why Ben wants this information, he wants to know how much product was seized, what was seized, how much was the value of it?
Yeah.
You know, so as much information as you can remember, whatever, even the agent's name, how many agents there were, what they told you, was there a dog, you know, was it confiscated right away, et cetera, et cetera. Because some of these agents have been very rude, you know, and I've experienced this myself. I've been searched at the border check before, and they're usually rude, and I'm rude back. You know, I'm not very nice about it. You know, I don't want to be treated like shit, so don't treat me like shit.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything. So, and at the time I didn't have any cannabis on me. There was none in my car, and they wasted their time and, you know, made a mess of my car and, you know, almost broke my computer.
Yeah.
And they were rude about it the entire time. They treated me like a criminal. And that's what they're doing to these companies that have broke no state law, has done everything right.
By the book.
Yeah. And a lot of these people aren't from here. So they're not used to, like, even people in Albuquerque aren't used to the border checks. Yeah. You know, they freak out.
Yeah.
So some of these people are like, oh my God, you know, and you know, us down here, I'm like, off, dude. But you know, that's the right. Anyway, I got a little off track there. I just want you guys to get all the information that you can get out to Ben, because our federal representatives are interested and our state government is interested. So they want all this information so they can then bring it to whatever and do whatever, maybe introduce a bill, maybe get a memorandum written up. You know, we had that one memorandum before the Trump administration took over that, you know, kind of helped us out a little bit. I forget what it was called at the moment because the guy's last name is a little interesting. Rickenbacker? He's an Oregon representative, and he wrote the memorandum and it went to the DEA. Then DEA kind of just, you know, and everyone else pretty much just acknowledged it. Said, yeah, okay, we'll go by it. That changed, you know, a different administration came in, that changed, they got rid of it. And no one's really renewed that since then. So now we're stuck with this. But if you guys have been affected by this, I know I'm saying it again, it sounds like a broken record. Please speak up. Don't be afraid to send this information in because your business is at risk because you could lose hundreds of thousands of dollars within seconds with this happening. There's been almost, I think, $1 million lost in the industry due to this issue.
And the other side of that, on a business level, you guys know that cannabis industry, there are no, you cannot take any deductions. Mm-hmm. You cannot file bankruptcy. Yep. So that's why a lot of small businesses fail, is because there's no support on the business end. We cannot get bank loans.
No.
I've been trying to get a bank loan for the last 2 months. As soon as they know that I'm in the cannabis industry, they say, no, sorry.
No.
You can't get any money.
No.
Well, you know, how the hell are we supposed to flourish and thrive with no money?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, what do they
expect? And then they take our product at the border check.
Yeah. And then, you know, on top of being taxed 40%, you know, with the 280E, you know, like that's pretty much what we're talking about. And then, And then they go and take our product and laugh at us.
Yes.
And treat us like we're criminals. And, you know, like it's ridiculous. Like, and I get, you know, these agents at the end of the day have to do their job, but there's a respectful way to do it. You know, there's a right way and a wrong way. And I'm not saying, you know, all of them are like that, but.
But when does the federal have jurisdiction over the state? I mean, they've been knowing this, that this has been going on in New Mexico for 2 years now.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they start.
Yeah. And that's what makes me say, I was like, is someone trying to get money from us? Because this is how sudden it is, you know, and like.
But how do they get money from us? I mean, we're losing money.
Well, I mean, from the people that have paid certain agents off to level them through is kind of what I mean. Is maybe that guy's
that payoff
wanting to pay off of some sort. There's a possibility.
Around here, it is possible.
Around here, it's possible because it happens. It's literally documented that it happens here. So I wanted to get you guys that information and everything out. You know, just make sure that you do speak up. That's all I really had updated wise about this matter. I'm probably going to be talking about it more because this isn't going to be an issue that goes away next week, next month, or even next year. We're going to be fighting this for years. So don't think that this is going to get fixed quickly, but with your help, we can get this fixed possibly quicker.
Yeah.
Who knows? But you know, this is something that we're going to be fighting for a while.
Well, this is another reason why I believe in this plant, is that it makes you, it opens up parts of your brain that makes you more mindful and present and conscious, and you're more apt to say something if you're enlightened.
Yeah.
And we really need as many voices as we can get to make the changes permanent.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and that's what I keep telling people. I mean, I'm only one voice.
Yeah,
you know,
like, we got to band together.
Yeah, and you know, I've already told you guys that it takes just one more person, takes two, from constituent to turn to constituents. So, you know, sometimes it only takes two people.
Yep.
So it doesn't really even take that many, guys. So just speak up. You know, who knows? Your voice could be the voice that changes everything. Yep. You know, so.
Well, I value everything that you're doing. I'm very proud of you. I think you're an example of what we all can do. And not focus on the greed and not focus on, you know, abuse, but focus on making changes that are going to outlive us.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be gone one day.
Yeah.
But everything that we do now is going to make a difference in the future.
I agree. You know, my nephew used to be able to benefit from things that I'm doing today. So that's something that I think
exactly
about. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. Hope you guys see this one day. They're like 7-4 right now. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, that's all I have for the Border Patrol thing. I will keep you guys updated, like I said. And I will also put that email in the description for you guys. I'll have it on the social medias. It's already on my stories on Facebook, and Instagram. But by the time you see this, those will probably be gone. So please rely on the description to get that email. We're going to move on. We're going to talk about our last topic for the day, and then we'll get out of here. So that way you guys can go to Akezo and get some chocolates and maybe some, you know, go make some of your own. Yeah, make some of your own and make some salves or something else. But we're going to talk about the pesticide issue. And this is about the recall that happened recently. I know I talked about this as well, but something else popped up with this too within the week. So as you guys know, pesticides were found in a certain product here in New Mexico. A recall was triggered. Everybody involved was informed, et cetera, et cetera. Certain people were affected by sales. You know, that's obvious when a recall happens. You know, people's sales tend to plummet. You know, and they usually recover.
But. And some people's health was affected by eating the products that were contaminated.
Yeah, because what was in it is malathion. We said this last week, but for those of you who weren't here last week or watched last week, the pesticide found was malathion, and it was found in certain extracts like wax and sugar waxes, stuff like that. And normally through extraction processes, you can get certain things out with that, which not I'm not always. A big fan of. It shouldn't be there in the first place.
Right.
But as you said, not always the case because this was found. As I told you before, it was tested in 2022 and wasn't found till the end of last year, really, and you know, brought to light, you know, just a couple weeks ago. So this is how certain things like that work. I do feel the CCD needed to let us know a little bit sooner, and they needed to let us know on their social media platforms. Mm-hmm. You know, it should have been put out there instead of just on their website, because even to find it on their website was a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had to think really hard. I'm like, all right, where would I put this? If I was New Mexico, where would I put this?
Mm-hmm.
And finally I found it, but you know, it should be easier. It should be one or two clicks to find it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's on your social medias, I see it right away. That's the only gripe I really have, you know, when it came to them putting it out, because they did do a recall. They did let everybody know that was involved. However, they didn't let the public know, you know, promptly. They let the media know, and the media kind of just ran with it. And there's a lot of misleading information that were in their articles, which kind of sucks. Now to update you what happened since then, looks like a lawsuit was put in against the CCD on this matter. And the lawsuit is alleging that the CCD didn't follow their own guidelines and rules and everything when they did the recall. And they also didn't follow their own guidelines when it comes to pesticides. They're claiming that malathion is not on the list. But I contacted the CCD earlier, I think last week before this was put out, and it makes sense why they gave me the response that they did. They only answered one question out of the series of questions that I had. And that was if malathion was a banned pesticide or not. And they told me in the email that it is a banned pesticide. They sent me the link to the NM Department of Ag, which is down here in Las Cruces. I called them first, and then they directed me to the CCD. And I was just like, you could have just told me to go to your website. It saved me a lot of time. I waited days for this. And so on the list, what it is, it's a list of approved pesticides that you can use. So that list isn't a list of non-approved. So if it's not on the list, that means you cannot use it. And I don't know if that's, you know, kind of confusing people or what, but that's what I found myself. I looked on there, I did a control find look, you know, I try to see if there's different names of malathion, and I couldn't find it on the approved list. So that's the claim being made, and that's the lawsuit. And the reason why I said the state gave me the answer they did is because I had a series of answers, and then they answered one and kind of half-ass answered the rest and kind of just left it at that. Now it makes sense why they answered me the way they did, because normally when a state gets sued or an entity within the state gets sued,
they
stop talking to everybody.
Yeah.
So they're not going to talk to the whole industry now while this lawsuit's going through. So now our relationship with the CCD has a little ding in it.
Yeah.
Even people that haven't done anything
right.
are just trying to figure out what's going on.
But the bottom line is, why are you using pesticides on cannabis?
That's my question too. Like, why is it even near where cannabis is growing?
No,
you know, if that's the case,
it should be approved or not approved. It should not be used.
Yeah,
this is medicine that people are ingesting, inhaling. You know, there was an issue years ago with aspergillus. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
which is a bacteria that was being sold with flowers being sold with aspergillus.
Yeah,
anybody with asthma or emphysema or COPD, they could die.
Yeah, and I will, you know, for the argument, you know, sake, malathion is very lightly tested on humans. There isn't a lot of tests on us, but you know, there's a lot of tests, things that aren't tested a lot on humans, and we know it's terrible for us. So, you know, just keep that in mind that there is risk when it comes to ingesting, inhaling whatever malathion. You know, there are recorded incidences. A lot of the things that I found in my research were from years ago, but the more recent things are like, yeah, it's not good for you. Because as I said before, the way that it kills bugs is it's pretty much a neurotoxin. Mm-hmm. You know, it triggers your nerves to, you know, just keep pumping sodium into it until it just stops working, and then they just get paralyzed. At a high dosage, of course, that's going to harm humans, of course. You know, at a low dosage, who knows, the harm effects could be slow, they could be small, or they could affect certain people with certain, you know, sicknesses and illnesses.
Including children, who, yeah, you know, we have a lot of medical patients that are children.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, they don't need to be ingesting pesticides.
Yeah. And I will say this for the record, you know, it's not the manufacturer's fault because he didn't grow the product or they didn't grow the product. You know, it starts from the grow.
Well, so I had an experience that I think is important to bring up. I had a grower who grew a strain called prickly pear, mm-hmm, last year. And upon inquiring what the COA results were, Rio Grande Analytics said, it's contaminated. It's not passing.
Yeah.
Don't buy it. So the grower said, well, let's take it to an extractor and try to remove the pesticide from it. Well, that doesn't always mean that it's good for the patients, because mm-hmm, they send it to somebody who is manufacturing and extracting illegally and putting it into the black market.
Yeah.
So these are the issues again with SB6?
Yeah, SB6 could and should solve.
Could help,
yeah,
if they could get that together to stop this illegal activities that a lot of growers and extractors are doing because nobody's keeping tabs on them.
Yeah, and it's very important, you know, for the producers out there to be very honest with the extractors that you're taking it to, because a lot of the times, if you don't tell them something that you're using, they're either going to find it or it's going to be found later, like in this case. So, well,
in our case, I just said, I don't want it. I didn't receive it. I didn't buy it. Then it got tested once it was extracted and it was failed again. So you have to destroy that.
Yeah.
And that's thousands of dollars,
yeah,
that you had to have extracted, and now you got to waste it.
Yeah. You could have, you know, cut your losses at the very beginning where they were, you know, marginally small.
Right.
Now you created a bigger issue for yourself because in the end you couldn't sell it. And then most likely that product probably ended up being backdoored onto the traditional market.
But manufacturers also have a responsibility to, you know, not take product that is contaminated, yeah, and that didn't pass and try to clean it, because chances are they're not going to be able to clean it.
Yeah.
And if it gets into the black market, there it is.
Yeah. And I think that's one flaw within our bill that needs to kind of be cleaned up. I wouldn't say removed, is the remediation of flour and how they allow you to remediate.
Yes.
Because I think that's one thing that's kind of promoting that kind of behavior.
Exactly.
It's like, well, if it's just bad, I'm just going to send it here.
Right.
And like, that's not the right answer.
No.
You know, the right answer is to just grow a clean product from the start, you
exactly
know, instead of having this contaminated product, because it's all over the place. I've ran into it myself.
Yes, yes.
I've seen it. I've seen the pictures online. I've been into certain grows. And seeing the issues myself, you know, firsthand. And so, you know, that's kind of where it's going, is because we're fueling this behavior that it's okay to grow contaminated cannabis and to use contaminants because you can always fix it in the end with remediation. But I kind of feel when you test a product, that test should be reported to the state. The
yeah
state should hold on to that, and you can't go anywhere else with it.
Exactly.
It has to go from there. And they can't like retest it to get a different result that they want that's favorable.
Right.
I feel the first time they test it. Now, this only works if we have standardization.
Yes.
That's not going to work until we get there. But I kind of feel that's going to help. Now, that's a step. What do we do to get to standardization? That's a different conversation.
Well, one of the things that I see lacking is people stepping up and having integrity.
Yeah.
Because,
I agree,
you know, this is a very sacred, not only sacred plant, but it's also a business.
Yeah.
And you're putting it out there into the communities. And if you don't have integrity, you're going to ruin everyone.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and that's one thing I try to tell people is, you know, you got to have integrity in this business, in this industry. And unfortunately, it's lacking that right
now. It's lacking big time.
And we're a new industry. I tell everybody, come year five, New Mexico's cannabis industry is going to be night and day different.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be like it was 2022, 2023, or even this year. You know, come 5 years, hopefully when we're stable, we've figured a few things out, we've changed some laws, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see what's going on then. But yeah, you know, that this is just part of our growing pains. Unfortunately, it kind of makes everything harder because now the CCD has gone Bravo 6 on us. And so that's not fun because it makes my job harder, it makes everybody else's job harder. And, you know, they're going to be weary if the person calling is going to be just trying to get information or screw them over. So, you know, they're not going to answer right. So unfortunately, that's what that's done. And New Mexico isn't we're not new to lawsuits when it comes to testing. When we were medical, most of the producers and manufacturers back then sued the state so they wouldn't have to test. And some of those people still operate today.
Yeah,
that's you true. Know, even today. And so some of them are held as high regard, but we can't forget that they also fought against our best interests when it comes to testing, because they said the product would become too expensive. They couldn't afford the testing. Where are they going to get it tested, et cetera, et cetera. All
there
these,
weren't any labs.
Yeah, yeah. There weren't any labs at the time, you know, and it was a requirement to test. You know, testing is still fairly new for New Mexico. I think it was, what, 2015, 2016? I think is when we started actually implementing it. I mean, it took a while.
Yeah, it took a while. And now there's plenty of labs now.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing, is that there are people who pay off the labs.
Mm-hmm.
If it fails from one lab and you take it to another lab, you pay them off and they pass it. That's lack of integrity again.
Yeah. And to be honest, that's an issue that's nationwide.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that's not just, you know, in New Mexico. That's the whole nation.
The whole country.
I'm luckily Colorado and California, they're starting to tackle that issue. They've changed a few things. And, you know, even within 3 to 6 months, the THC levels dropped because now they're more accurate.
Yeah.
You know, people were getting like 40% THC, you know, something ridiculous on flower. And I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Come on, stop paying them for the numbers you want.
Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, in New Mexico, we'll have to change too. And I've said this before in previous episodes that maybe we should look at what Colorado and California is doing and, you know, see what they did, if it will work in New Mexico, for one. And what they did, maybe it will
absolutely
work.
Absolutely. We should be learning from the states that have been doing this longer.
Yeah. I mean, we have with this, you know, so why not?
Yeah. I mean, that's important that we learn from their mistakes as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's the only way we learn here. You know, yeah. I think New Mexico has done that with, you know, the way that we created our laws and the way that the laws are being implemented right now.
Yeah.
You know, we have home grows. You can possess as much as you want at home. That's amazing. You know, like I think we're the only state that allows that, to be honest. I think everybody has a possession limit at home. But you know,
well, that's another whole other issue. And that's that there's you know, people who have no integrity and grow their own. And then they sell it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of holes in the system.
Yeah. And I kind of feel that issue isn't really going to go away mm-mm. until we get a national industry going to where, because you don't really see it that often when it comes to, I hate to compare it this way. It's the only thing I can though, to beer and alcohol. You can make your own beer at home.
Yeah.
You know, you can make your own wine, but you cannot sell it. You can share it, et cetera, et cetera. But there's certain people that still sell it. And
yep.
that is very illegal.
Yeah. There's no compliance, so who's yeah. gonna check?
Yeah, but that the percentage of people that actually sell alcohol is very small, because unless you have a stellar beer product, people aren't gonna want to pay for it because they can just go to the store and buy something probably better.
And cheaper.
And that's gonna happen with cannabis mm-hmm. in due time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just that isn't right now. And unfortunately, we still have that issue. And that's one thing that we're gonna have to be fighting in the future, because there's certain lawmakers that wanna make us go back to getting a license to grow at home. Now, will that curb people selling it on the black market? No. The people that really want to sell it will just get the license, you know, and they'll just do it the right way. So it's really not going to change until the federal laws kind of catch up to. I'll leave it up to y'all to see who's to blame. You know, I'm not going to tell you who to blame. Look up the information. I'll give you guys more information as it comes. No news network has picked this story up yet. I'm literally like the only one talking about this.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I do have a call later on with Associated Press. So I'm going to, you know, hopefully get that out at the national level. We can get this story going. But I'll try to keep y'all updated. Come up to your own conclusions on the matter. But just keep everything in mind that I told you, you know, what's going on with all this. So I know y'all have a lot of questions, but I'll try to have y'all some answers. Dr. Chavez, thank you so much again for joining me.
And it's my pleasure.
So great to see you, you know, through, you know, the years and, you know, where we both have started and come, you know, because I know you've wanted this, you know, pretty much the whole time. You've always wanted this. You just couldn't do it. And now it's here. So, you know, congratulations. And,
thank you.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. It's a heartfelt project, and my dream came true, unfortunately, because of the issues with CCD and lack of compliance and law enforcement. You know, the illegal elements have affected my dream. But
yeah.
I'm going to push forward, and with people like you, educating and getting more people to speak up, I think we can make a difference.
I do too. And like she said, y'all, make sure you speak up. All right, guys. Well, I'll see you next week. We'll be back again. We'll see what happens within the week, because things are getting weird. So I'll see y'all next time.
Peace.
yeah. Watch the time
too. Okay, yeah, I got you. I got like two more points and wrap it up.
Okay.
Cool. He's going to go get the door.
Should I start putting this stuff away?
No, we'll leave it so that way it doesn't look all funny. All of a sudden we have nothing on here. Okay. It's like, wait, where'd it go?
Where'd it go? Did you eat it all?
It's like, damn, you smoked that fast.
So you brought up some really good points. And these are things that I think about all the time. And I talk to other, you know, I know pretty much everybody in this area that grows, manufactures, or extracts, or retails. And there's a lot of people here from other states mm-hmm. that have come and exploited the openness of the New Mexico law.
Yeah.
I tried to tell her this for years. Limit it. For a couple of years, limit it.
That's what I was saying.
She wouldn't do it. She wouldn't do it. And when I talked to her a year ago and I said, you didn't do it, what I asked you to do. And she said, oh, I can't. I said, yes, you can, Governor. You can make changes. This is hurting the New Mexicans.
Yeah.
When everybody's coming from Washington, Oregon, California, Colorado, Oklahoma, Arizona, it's not good for New Mexicans.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing that hurts. But luckily, what's happening is the shift from the consumer is starting to turn to craft. So that's
we
on the
support
horizon.
All the yes. craft growers.
Yeah. Absolutely. All it's turning to craft. And I'm seeing it too. And Canada is starting to see it.
Yes.
Yep, we'll wrap it up. Okay. Just keep running. Yeah, we'll just
I was just going to say, just keep going. You guys are having a conversation.
But
because you can tell that we're passionate about this. We've been passionate about this. We know that we are movers and shakers and we can make a difference. That's why I'm here.
Yeah,